November 3rd is the date of our presidential election this year, but the yet to be determined results of the elections are already facing many challenges that could potentially push back an official outcome. Among the big questions surrounding this election, how do people vote fairly and safely during a pandemic? Election law expert Justin Levitt has been tracking the lawsuits already filed around the country. He's cited in a recent Bloomberg article titled, "Everybody is Suing, Trump-Biden Election Sets Up Legal Logjam." Justin's a professor of law at Loyola Marymount University Law School in Los Angeles. He previously served as Deputy Assistant Attorney General in the Civil Rights Division of the U.S. Department of Justice. Justin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Well, at your latest count, how many lawsuits are out there related to this 2020 election?
These are just the lawsuits that have to do with the pandemic. So you have to add a lot of continuing litigation from the last couple of years that's still got to sort itself out. But I'm up to 166 cases in 41 states and D.C. so far. And that's, by any measure, an awful lot of lawyers in an awful lot of courtrooms. And I know Wisconsin has seen more than its fair share.
Yeah, one of those issues, one of the themes in the lawsuits that you looked at, particularly relevant here in Wisconsin, when it comes to consolidation of polling places. We saw a fair amount of that during our primary election that we held. Can you talk about the types of suits out there that address this idea of we can't have all of our polling sites open?
Yeah, it's not actually clear to me how much litigation is going to be able to do about that. So unfortunately, the pandemic is changing the way that we vote. Traditionally, everybody's used to voting entailing large numbers of people gathering in a small number of small places. And that can't happen this year. Wisconsin obviously saw that front and center during its primaries earlier this year. But the main barrier to opening the number of polling places to actually serve Wisconsin's public wasn't policy as much as it was simple lack of resources and a sudden lack of resources from the sudden onset of COVID-19. So if locations don't feel that it's safe to allow voting in a particular place, and people who had volunteered to be poll workers don't feel like they're safe in showing up, that creates a huge problem. We rely tremendously in this country on volunteer resources to help run elections. And unfortunately, Wisconsin ran into the sharp end of that buzzsaw right in its primaries in April. And not just in Milwaukee, I should point out. A lot of attention, very rightly so, turned to the radical reduction in the number of polling places open in Milwaukee, due in part to a large number of poll workers canceling. But a week before the election this April, there were over 100 rural towns in Wisconsin that didn't have one poll worker available, not even one. And so the impact of relying on volunteer help to keep the polls open really shows some of the weaknesses in the system.
So you say that may not have a lot of recourse. The option for voting in person for many people will be voting by mail. Now, Attorney General William Barr was before Congress today talking about a lot of different stuff. Voting by mail came up, its impact on the fairness of the election. Barr said he thinks a wholesale transition to voting by mail would create a large risk of election fraud, though there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence of a big risk. What are we seeing, though, when it comes to lawsuits surrounding voting by mail?
You're seeing a lot of litigation around voting by mail, in part because the system that we have isn't particularly used to acting quickly. And as you indicated, you got to act really quickly in a pandemic. So some states have had lots of voting by mail for a long time. I happen to be sitting in one, California, about 60% of voters voted by mail. It's up to 90, 95, 99% in states like Oregon and Washington. Other states are much less accustomed to voting by mail and have had only 2, 3, 4% vote by mail. In a pandemic where there simply aren't as many resources to be able to vote in person, and we'll always need some, I have to emphasize that. For some populations, it's really important to be able to get to the polls. But in a pandemic, in order to save those resources, we really need as many people as possible to vote by mail. It is secure, it has been secure, but not all of the rules and regulations currently on the books are flexible enough to allow the ramp up we need. So a lot of people are understandably turning to the courts saying, hey, we've got some regulations, they might suit a normal period, but not a pandemic. We need your help, courts, in opening things up.
have there been challenges in the other direction? People saying, hey, wait a minute, you are making it too easy to vote by mail. You're defeating the purpose of what we intended as just a backup absentee balloting system.
There have been some. I'll say they haven't really been successful. The more successful version of that is lawsuits against particular decision makers claiming that this should be an issue for a legislature or should be an issue that the courts have to implement rather than executives that have issued orders. We saw some of that push and pull in Wisconsin as well, with push and pull against the governor attempting to postpone or delay the primary date. The allegations pushing back against the wholesale opening up of vote by mail, saying this is an avenue to fraud or this is an avenue to misconduct, really haven't gone so well. And there's a good reason for that. The fears of widespread fraud in the system aren't really backed up by evidence at all. There are, of course, a few circumstances in a few local elections when something has happened with the mail system, just like there are occasional reports in local elections of stuffing the ballot boxes in an old-fashioned way. But there's no evidence of any widespread problem that would affect a statewide election or a national election. And though that argument has gotten a little bit of traction in sort of public discourse, the courts demand evidence, and there really isn't much evidence to offer. And so people who have challenged the opening up of the rules, saying this is going to lead to fraud, when the court says, okay, show me, there's not a lot to show.
Talking to Justin Levitt, law professor at Loyola Marymount University Law School in Los Angeles, looking at lawsuits already related to the 2020 election and to voting changes in the midst of a pandemic. There are some other categories, Justin, but I want to get into the potential impact here. We could, either in a local election or congressional or even presidential, we could end up on election day with a lot of potentially unresolved lawsuits. Is that right?
I think most of the lawsuits will be resolved by then. The good news, if there is good news in this much litigation this early, is that we're getting some of the fights out of the way. I'd much rather have a lawsuit in March or April or May that gives an answer in July or August than have the same lawsuit in October that last passed the election. But I do think on election night, you're going to have a number of states where even if the litigation's resolved, the actual election count may not be. That is, in states that are really close, and Wisconsin certainly looks like it may be one of those, the number of absentee ballots is going to make it hard to get a result on election night. And I think the really important thing for people to remember is that's okay. That is, if it takes longer than election night to actually count all the ballots, that's a sign that the system is working and not that it's broken. We have a really good system, actually, for checking the list once and then checking it twice to make sure that the number of ballots we've got and the ballots add up as they're supposed to. And I think we're all going to have to indulge a little bit of patience in allowing that time to play out rather than seeing the election countdown on election night and seeing that the ticker go off and seeing that the polls have closed and then thinking that there's something wrong when they don't actually call a state for Biden or for Trump. Really, that's just the process working as it should. We'll get a count. It just may take a little while longer this time.
You mentioned lawsuits in March or April or maybe later in the game in October. How about a November 4th? If I've lost an election, say, and I think something has been done wrong in the election system or want to claim that it's been done wrong, could we see a bunch of lawsuits the day of, day after Election Day?
Yeah, we might well see that as well. One thing we've learned is that people, either incumbents who are seeking to keep office or those who are seeking to take it, will sort of turn to a whole bunch of different mechanisms to try and establish who actually won. It is not unthinkable that we might have a lawsuit filed on November 4th or November 3rd that takes a little while to resolve. That's also part of the dispute resolution process we've got. So where there's uncertainty in the count, those lawsuits, that litigation is part of the process for figuring out, okay, are we sure we've got the count right? And that too, that can feel really uncomfortable because it feels really contentious, but that's actually the system working. And courts are pretty good about navigating the straits of a lawsuit to overturn an election or to try and make sure we got the results right for an election. They demand evidence, and that's a way of holding us all accountable.
We'll leave it there. Justin, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Of course.
Justin Levitt is a professor of law at Loyola Marymount University Law School in Los Angeles. We talked to him today about a large amount already of lawsuits filed around the country relating to the 2020 election and voting during a pandemic.